Welcome everybody to this bonus episode of Bridging the Geekdoms. I'm your host, Robert Slavinsky, and let me tell you, I got something really special for you today. A few weeks back, I got to sit down with John Horsley of Spoiler Country. And no, we didn't sit there and talk movies, comic books, and TV shows like both of our respective podcasts do. We actually sat down and talked about his project that is currently in development, an upcoming book called The Ainz Anthology. Let me tell you, this is one of the most interesting podcasts I've ever done. I know I'm not the greatest interviewer, but this just had to be done. I had to talk to him about this because he sent me a few of the sample pages. I got to read through them, and holy crap, was I impressed with what I saw. And hopefully very soon this book comes out, but I want you guys to listen to this interview, and if you like what you hear, down below in the description, there are all the links where you can help support him and really get this thing going for him. And I can't tell you how excited I am for it. John has become one of my most admired podcasters in the world, and I think he is doing an excellent job. He's one of the most ambitious people I've ever met. So just stay tuned and listen to the interview now. What's going on, everyone? Robert from Bridging the Geekdoms here, and I got a special episode for you today. With me today is John Horsley. Now, you may know that name if you've ever heard the podcast Spoiler Country, but that's not what he's here to talk about today. No, he's here to talk about something really, really cool, and I think, after what I've seen, pretty ambitious on his part. It is a book that is going to be coming out here very soon called The Ainz Anthology. So he's here. He's the one involved with making this book. So I want to talk to him. I want to get his input on everything about this book because I've read some of it. I really enjoy it, but I want to get some information from him. So how's it going, John?
It is going, man. That's quite the intro. Yeah, it's going. And when you said it's quite the undertaking, you're not lying on that, man. I'm not going to try and hide the fact this was a beast of a project to take on.
Yeah. So how long have you been working on it?
Just about 2 years. Yeah. It's about 2 years to get the first book, and the first book is 9 stories and 64 pages.
What is it that made you think of doing a book like this? Well, I guess maybe we should first explain what the book is, though. But yeah,
sure, I can do both. So first, what the book is the book is a supernatural horror thriller. I say all three of those because it kind of involves all three elements throughout the various stories told in the book. And it is dealing with this family called the Ainz family. The surname is Ainz, right? So what I did is I created a family tree that dated about 1,000 years with some gaps in it. But basically, I made about 250 characters, birthdays, death dates, names, family relationships, kind of like, you know, children, cousins, grandpas, uncles, stuff like that. And I created all these characters and all this lineage and this basic outline of a world or a universe that these characters live in. In their world, there's monsters. And by monsters, I mean there's, you know, demons, there's vampires, werewolves, anything supernatural that could be called a monster could exist within this world. And in this world, the monsters have this attraction or this draw to the Ainz family. There is some supernatural element to the family itself, to the family bloodline. And the family itself, the characters of that family, also have a draw to the supernatural, although it's not quite as strong as the monsters have to them. Now, it's not black and white. There are good monsters, there are bad monsters, there are good Ainz, there are bad Ainz, and there's everything in that gray area in the middle as well. The whole point of the series is to tell stories in this world about this family throughout time in different styles and different voices to kind of give this whole world view that's happening to this family. Now, there is an overall arching story in each book told throughout all the short stories, but you have to pay attention to catch it. It's like it's not in your face, here's the overall story. It's if you pay attention and read all the short stories and read the stuff in between the stories, you'll say, oh, there's a bigger narrative going on here. And that was a big undertaking to do. Now, how did this book come about? Well, to get to that, I got to tell you a little bit of a backstory. I started doing comics as an indie comic artist writer back in 2002 with web comics. I started doing a comic book based on my friends in college. called Y2CL, or back then it was called Y2Christ. And it was a really stupid superhero comic where the idea was the main character, Dylan, turned into a superhero called Y2Christ, who was completely nude and fought crime. He didn't know how to wear clothes when he was in a superhero outfit. Didn't want to make an outfit, so he just fought crime naked because he was invulnerable. So, and his arch nemesis was based on my friend Keppa, whose name was Kapowie, because long story short, his real name, if you say it really fast, it sounds like you're saying Kapowie. So I made a bad guy named Kapowie, who was a mob boss. And then the whole idea of the original story was for them to fight and, stupid jokes and antics with all of my friends and using all of their real names, because that's what you do when you don't know how you're doing, is just use real names and people. And I got about 12 pages into that book I wrote the whole first script of 24 pages. And then I got in the drawing and I drew the first 12 pages, and I got to page 12 and I was like, this is garbage. This is absolute hot garbage. No one's going to want to read this. The art is terrible. The script is garbage. This is dumb. So I scrapped it. I mean, I still have it, but I scrapped any ideas of ever printing that book. But then I went, hey, webcomics are a thing right now. People are getting big into webcomics. Let's do that. So I made Y2Christ Light, which was a light version of the superhero comic. Because at that time, I was like, oh, well, someday maybe I'll go back and rework the superhero angle and tie it into this webcomic and do something with it. I never did. So I called it Y2Christ Light. I brought all the characters from that comic book into a webcomic and then started telling dick and fart jokes and basically making fun of myself and my friends for 13 years. So I did that webcomic for 13 years. Within that webcomic, I started telling some more mature stories with the dick and fart jokes. I had the whole like zombie outbreak storyline back in 2008 for like 2 years, and a bunch of other stuff. And then in 2016, I decided I wanted to break away from the dick and fart joke model of comics. I mean, it was fun, but I feel like after 13 years of doing it through 11 different webcomics that I had created and done, time to move on to something else I had passion to creatively wise. So that was, I've always had a knack or a love for drawing monsters and drawing demons and just drawing scary, gross shit. And so much so that my wife hates it when I draw that stuff, which is like, I want to hate it, but you're really good at it. However, I want you to draw pretty stuff. And I try to draw something pretty, then I'll draw like some demon in the background. Cause I'm like, oh, it has to be there for some reason. So I stopped doing the webcomics in 2016 around the time. Well, I had planned to stop them in 2016. But I started working on something called the Ions. Now, I didn't know it was called the Ions back then. Back then it was just an idea. So in 2016, 2015, I started building this idea. And originally what I wanted to do, and this is kind of the first time I've ever told anybody this far back of the creation of the Ions. This is kind of like an exclusive for you here.
Well, thank you.
Because, I wanted to give you something cool. So I decided to tell this story on this show and not on the other shows. So this is for you. I wanted to tell a story about my family, right? About myself and my kids. I have 5 kids and like I'm close to my mom and my sister and my wife's family. We're all close. So I wanted to tell a story about my wife and my kids and me, but I didn't want it to be super obvious. I mean, obviously it's going to be obvious. If I write a story with a husband and a wife and 5 kids, shocker, they're going to think I'm basing it on my family, right? So what I did is I started writing a story. I called it I was having a lot of personal anxiety issues at the time. I have social anxiety and I get anxiety. I've learned to control it really well, but there's times where I just like box myself off because I just get so anxious. I just can't focus on anything. And at the time I was having a bunch of anxiety and I was going to see a therapist and stuff like that. And I decided the best way to try and get through it is I always felt the best way that I can ever make myself feel better is by being creative. And I wanted to do something that was straight for that. So I created what at the time I just nicknamed sci-fi anxiety story. And I started working on that and creating characters. Now, obviously that one was, I base it, 200 years in the future, off world somewhere else. And I created characters that were modeled after myself, my wife, and all 5 of my kids. And the whole idea of that story was for me to be able to tackle my inner demons of anxiety and depression and stuff like that through this creative outlet of this guy in the future, fighting monsters or whatever like that. Right. And I wanted to pay homage to my dad and my grandpa and somewhat to myself too, because we all have the same name. Like legally, my name is letters J N Horsley the 3rd. So I just have letters for names. And so does one of my sons is the 4th. So I wanted to pay homage to that legacy name that I have, but I didn't want it to be obvious. So the name Ines comes from J. Ines, J-N. I kind of like just modified my name to make it into something. and came up with Ainz. So that's how the Ainz name got created. Now, and then to how we got to the Ainz book is after I was working on the sci-fi anxiety story for a little bit, but then I was like, well, I really kind of, this is going to be hard to draw. I'll be honest. My idea to stop that story for a little while was I'm not very attuned to drawing ships and sci-fi weapons and stuff that requires symmetry and straight lines. My art style is more sporadic and spastic and like attuned to like splatter art and stuff, to where it's like, it's not like it's all messy, but it's like, it's more non-clean lines to tell a story and to be that rough edginess you get in horror stuff. And I was watching my friend Greg Smith. He had put out a kid's book or a teenager book called Junior Braves of the Apocalypse that deals with like zombies and stuff like that. And then he was in a monsters anthology. I was seeing all these horrors up online. And I was like, I can do that, or I want to do that. So I started thinking of anthologies. Like, man, anthologies are cool. But one thing I don't like about anthologies is that it's usually just a collection of stories that don't really connect to each other. They're not really in tune with the story before, the story after it. Like, they may have the same theme, but they may be different stories about monsters, or they may be different stories about romance or westerns or whatever, but they're not just like all stories that tell one bigger story or connect. And they're always like, hi, I'm the editor, I'm making this anthology, or we're the publisher, I'm making an anthology, you know, get your team together, submit it to me. And if your story is good enough, after you've put all the work into it and done all the, you know, you as the creator wanting to be in this book, have paid your artist, paid your colorist, or paid whoever to create a story that may or may not get in, then we'll go through and weed out who gets in and gets out. I never liked that aspect about anthology. I never liked submitting a story to an anthology and saying, okay, oh yeah, now it's good enough, we'll publish it, without, you know, and some, most anthologies you get into, bless their heart, I understand paying people is not, you know, what everybody can do, especially when it's small press. But like, you know, some anthologies that I've done before, it's like, okay, you submit an 8-page story and it gets approved, and there's a writer and an artist and a colorist and an inker and a letter on the book. So there's, you know, 4 or 5 people, and your payment is $20 and a copy of the book, you know, for sinking in however much time that would be to be in, you know, to make that. Cause I did one for a publisher back East, and it took me, you know, 3 weeks to draw it. And my payment for the book was, you know, one comped copy of the book. And then I could buy more copies myself, you know, if I wanted to, at $10 a piece, which, you know, I can't fault people for doing that. But personally, I was like, I don't like that, because I feel like I've always been a strong advocate of, you should get paid for the work you do. If you do work, you should be paid, and you should be compensated fairly and accurately for your level of work and for what you're expecting, for what you think you're worth. So what I set out to do with this was to do it differently. I thought, well, let's create a story. Let's create a world. And then in that world, I want to tell stories, and I want to tell stories with other people. But I want to make sure that these other people aren't waiting on some possibility of a paycheck if the book sells, or having their paycheck be, you know, a comped copy when they deserve to be paid for their story. So I put the call out in a Facebook group in June of 2016, I think it was, something like that. And then I was looking for writers for this anthology I was working on. And I gave a brief description of what it was. I didn't want to give away too much information, but I basically just said, you know, there's a family, there's monsters, they're connected, not everybody's good or bad. We tell stories in this world. Hit me up if you're interested. Well, I expected to get a couple responses here or there, because I mean, I've had a name in webcomics, you know, because I was doing it for 13 years. I had 11 different webcomics, and I had a name a little bit. But I didn't have a name in print comics. You know, nobody in the print comic world, indie comic world, really knew who I was. And I didn't expect them to. But I put this call out there, and I expected, you know, maybe 10, 20 responses. I got 250 writers respond to me about writing in this book, which was insane. I had to go through over 200 different writing samples, talk to people, you know, see people's level of involvement they wanted to be in, talk out contracts and payment and stuff like that for people that I wanted. And some people were so far out of range, I couldn't afford to pay them. And some were, you know, some people said, here's my rate for a story. And I said, well, that's too little. Let's give you a little bit more money. So I did is out of my own pocket, I hired all these writers, and I paid them the fee that I agreed upon based upon, you know, what they agreed to. And I brought in about 25 different writers to write stories in this world. And I worked with each writer to select somewhere in time they wanted to be at, the characters they wanted to work with, kind of what these characters were, what they represent. And they would give me their pitch of this is the kind of story I'm wanting to tell. This is the monsters I wanted to work to use. Does this work in with the other stories to kind of make sure each story stands by itself, but each story also helps tell the overall story of the book. And the idea was that each story could be a self-contained story in 4 to 8 pages if they want it to be, or it could be just like the middle of a story, like just showing the meat and potatoes of a story, but not showing the in or the out, and save that for something else. Because the whole idea is that the short stories you're reading are snippets in time with this family and dealing with the monsters and kind of what they've had to go through throughout time. So that was a process to get to there and to get all of that in tune with the story. And that was just getting the writing part. Now, doing that took months, because that was back and forth emails and messengers, people talking to people on Messenger and forgetting who was who sometimes and messaging the wrong person, which was always fun. But that was getting to the writing point. And then we had people like, you know, Greg came to me, my friend Greg Smith, because he was obviously somebody on the book. I wanted him in the book. He was one of the writers I wanted to write in the book because he's a friend of mine. He's a great writer. He brought in his co-writer, Michael Tanner, who wrote a fantastic story that's in book one called The Wanderer. Greg has a story in book one called Nate Ersatz and the Skinwalkers. And then Greg also brought me, you know, Travis Webb, who I didn't know at all, but turns out him and I kind of grew up in some of the same circles a little bit. And I didn't know him. I didn't go to things he did, but I knew people who went to his things. He used to throw parties in Seattle, and I would know people who went there. Him and I hit it off and talked, and he ended up writing this really awesome story called The Black Hand, which takes place in World War One. And the first half of that story is in book one. So I ended up meeting these other creators through certain creators, and then meeting new creators through my call out, and getting just a bunch of great stories. And in the process of talking to these writers, I would find they would introduce me to other artists or colorists or letterers that I could work with. And that was just a lot of fun getting to that point. And that just gets us right to the writing part. Then I had to come to the art. Now, my original concept for this book, for the art-wise, was I was going to draw the whole thing myself. It was very ambitious and very dumb, because anybody who thinks they can draw, 25 stories by themselves, who's an amateur artist, who is not a professional comic book artist, nor has the time to sit and do art, 10 hours a day, because I didn't, because I work a full-time job and I have a family and kids that I like to see, will tell you that that's insane. So after about 6 to 8 months of me trying to work out timelines to sit down and draw these books, I'd only drawn, one story. I decided, you know what? I need to contact some of my friends and find people that I like their artwork on and trust to bring into this world as artists to help me tell these stories. Because I realized originally, I was like, oh man, this is going to be a great portfolio piece for me to show off all my art. But then it was like, I don't want a portfolio piece. I want to tell the best stories I can and give people the best book that I can. And that means being humble and knowing that me stepping back on some of the stories, or most of the stories actually, and bringing in artists that are amazing and can tell these stories better than I can, is more important than me, trying to flex my muscles and do all the art. So I started bringing in artists. And the first one I brought in was a friend of mine, Rick Bugbee out of Michigan, who he has drawn some stories for me in the past. He drew a couple webcomic pages for me. He's worked on some other stuff for me. He's an amazing, amazing artist. I am so surprised he's not working mainstream, because he is fantastic. And if you looked at the sample book I sent you, he has two stories in there that you got to read. The one called Some Days that took place in the 1100s.
Oh, yeah.
It was the old one with this watercolor.
That's really good.
He drew that. He's amazing. And then the other one called Camelot's Gift, which there was two pages in that sample book, which is about the detective. It's all black and white. He drew that as well. And the guy is just amazing. And, he blows me away. And I sent him the pitch for the story. I'm like, hey, do you want to help me out and do some art for this? And he goes, hell yeah, man. So he's actually drawn three stories in Irons right now. The two you saw in that book. And he has another one that's going to be in book two called Fate's Lonely Passage, which is written by TJ Troy, who is a Grammy award-winning musician. He's a phenomenal writer, a super nice guy. And he wrote an amazing story that's 11 pages, going to be in book two, that Rick's drawing. And Rick is, I kind of wish I would have put some of the art for that in the sample book, but it wouldn't have been appropriate because it's a sample book for book one, not book two. But Rick is knocking it out of the park for that one. So I brought Rick in first. And then I decided, I need to make a budget, because this is getting expensive, paying all the writers, then starting to pay artists, because artists cost you per page. So each page they draw costs you an X number of dollars. And some people are cheap, some people are not cheap. So I made a budget and I started working with people. I'm like, okay, started messaging artists that I liked. I put out a call on Facebook again, say, hey, I need some help with this. You know, is any artists out there have time? Hooked up with some artists from, you know, from the US, from the Philippines, from Indonesia, you know, from all over the world. Cause I don't care. You know, if you can draw and you can tell a story, perfect. I don't care where you're at. You know, that's the way I say. I have writers from one of the stories in book one called Something Borrowed is written by a guy in Nigeria and drawn by a guy in Indonesia. So, I mean, I don't know. It's just, it's cool how things work out that way and different voices get told in the book. But then it started getting really expensive because, you know, per page rates, because a 64 page book and you say times that by everybody's page rate. And then I have to have colorists come in and I have to have letterers come in and, you know, it gets real expensive real quick. But my wife decided, we don't care. This is a book that I think is going to resonate with people. I think people are going to love it or they're going to hate it. Right. And for me personally, I love it. And I love what we're doing on this book. And it's the cost to get it to print to get it to Kickstarter is fine with me. Like, I'm not even trying to recoup any of my costs in the Kickstarter. The Kickstarter is literally just to cover the cost of printing the book because all of the creators in the book have already been paid. I've already paid them all out of my own pocket. I don't have to, technically I should recoup that cost in the Kickstarter to try and pay myself back. But I care more about the book getting into print and people getting to read these stories that I've been spending 2 years with these amazing creators on, to tell these stories versus just trying to make money off of it. Obviously I want to make money off the book so I can keep making more, but I'd rather people buy the book and experience these stories and experience what these creators have done more than just, do a cash grab for money. Does that answer your question in a long-winded way?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that was pretty long-winded there. No, the one thing that really grabbed my attention with this is the anthology aspect. Anthologies are one of those things in today's world that are, there's always a place for it. And take a look at what's on Netflix right now with Black Mirror. I mean, that's an anthology series and it's huge. People love it. And I mean, obviously, we're not going to compare this to that because it's two completely different types of storytelling models, kind of. But anthology, that idea is big. I mean, people like, they're talking about bringing the Twilight Zone back, which was another anthology series. So people like,
I love the Twilight Zone.
Yeah. So people like, they want this kind of stuff. It's just, now it's going to be about getting it out there. I did read out of the sample that you gave me, what was there? Four stories. I think it was actually, I was able to read three. Like I said, there was one that I couldn't see, like it wouldn't let me zoom in to see it, so that was kind of disappointing. But
that one was crap. Don't worry about it. Okay. Just kidding. I'm kidding. There's no crap in the book. I promise you.
the one thing that really stuck out to me, and it was like the first thing that I messaged you was the idea of the, like the paranormal or the, just the monsters, the otherworldly. Like that was one of the first things that popped out to me. And I asked you, I was like, hey, so like, are you into that stuff? But you had an interesting response. So can you dive into that a little bit? Like, are you into that kind of stuff what?
Nope. Not really. I said anybody messaged me, I was like, no, not really. But I mean, I do love supernatural stuff. I do love paranormal, like the whole mind fuckiness of horror movies and suspense movies and thrillers and stuff like that. And I do, I like, it's kind of going back a little far here and kind of dating me, where that's fine, but like the Blair Witch, right? When that came out, that was a huge fucking deal. Like, people make fun of that movie now, and rightfully so, because it's kind of corny. But when that came out, that marketing plan behind the Blair Witch Project and like the way that movie was approached and the way, really going into it, they didn't tell you whether it was a fictional documentary or if it was a real documentary, because it was marketed online as this shit is real. We sent it out and did this. You didn't find out that it was all fake till, after it was out. And, it was scary, and it got you thinking about, oh, there's all, is there this otherworldly shit out there? And then, movies like Paranormal Activity or any kind of ghost stories out there, I am intrigued by them. I don't spend a lot of time. When I read your question in the chat, what I took that is do I spend time researching like real life paranormal stuff, or like am I a paranormal nerd in the fact that I spend a lot of time consuming in conspiracy theories around paranormal and ghosts and monsters and stuff like that? And the answer to that is not really no. I mean, I do sometimes, like if like I'm going somewhere and someone says like, oh, that place is haunted, I'll look into that and shit like that. but I'm more of like the nerd that consumes the content from creations that are, you know, clearly fiction, but done in such a way that you question things, that makes you go, that could be real, or, ooh, that's scary because I can see this happening, or things that question your perception of reality. That's what I'm into. And, you know, that's kind of what I wanted to do with Ainz, was tell these stories that at some point in the book, some of the stories you can go, oh, that's interesting, and change maybe the way you think about something. I'm not out to change the world with this. It's a horror book. It's meant to be fun. It's meant to be, have jump scares and stuff like that into it, but it's also meant to be intriguing. There are definitely some stories in there that are sad and that are messed up. I mean, the one story that is in the sample book that only has two of the six pages in the sample book, but it's the one called Camelot's Gift. It's one that I wrote and that Rick Bugbee drew. It's pretty much a speechless six pages. There's not really any words. There's a couple words. There's not really any like talking in the story. And it is just probably one of the most messed up things I've ever written. And it stems from an idea I had like 15 years ago that I wrote down as a story. And then I ended up reworking that story to match the Ainz about 2 years ago. It was the first story I wrote for the Ainz. And because I was like, I have this thing I've never did anything with. Then I expanded it was four pages. I made it six pages. And then kind of like made the twist even bigger than it was before and kind of reworked it to make it, better. But it's like, it's stuff like that where it's like, you know, it didn't need text to move the story along, because one, Rick did such an amazing job telling the story in art. And since I'm an artist myself, when I write scripts, I tend to be super detailed in my description of what's happening in the panel, at least when I write like this. Because originally I had planned to draw that story myself. So I was like, well, this is so detailed, and this story really relies heavily on the art directing the eye and directing everything that's being told. So I'll do it myself. But then I started talking to Rick, and I was like, you know what? If anybody I know personally can do this, it's going to be Rick. So I gave it to Rick, and I was like, Rick, this is going to be difficult. And he's like, I'll take it on. He's like, you're descriptive in your panels. I'm sure I can take it. So he took it, and he blew me away. Like he came back with the pages for that story that are better than anything I could ever imagined of doing or imagine him doing. I was so, so impressed with what he gave me for that story. And the fact that the way he drew the panels, and he changed some of my panel layouts, and he changed the way some things were working, and the way he made the panels flow, you don't need any text in it to figure out what's going on. If you pay attention to the art, by the end of the story, you're going, oh my God, what the hell just happened? And it's sad and it's depressing. And it's Rick knocked it out. And it's stuff like that that I wanted in the book, along with, you know, because not every story is going to be like that. You know, there's stories that are a little more upbeat, a little more, have that happy, satisfying ending. But there are definitely stories in there that we put in there on purpose in certain places to take away that happy feeling and kind of leave you uneasy at the end. The story of The Wanderer, when you pick up the book and you read The Wanderer by Michael Tanner and drawn by Clayton Holyfield, that one's going to leave a bad taste in people's mouth, and that's on purpose. And I actually had we actually hired a colorist to color that story. And, after reading the script, he said, I can't do this. I can't color the story. And, while that sucks, because he's a good colorist, it kind of means that our point of the story of what the feeling we wanted people to have at the end of that story hit perfectly. So yeah.
the Camelot's Gift one that you were just talking about, I completely agree with the way that the panels are shown. It's definitely different than what I'm used to. I mean, let's face it. When it comes to comic books, I'll read almost anything that's out there when it comes to a comic book.
Yeah.
But what do I read most is mostly superhero stuff. You know, the things with, you know, Batman, Superman, right, all that kind right. of stuff. So this was very different from what you normally see in a everyday comic book type of thing. I was absolutely taken aback by some of the panels here and just the placement and how the story flows through the panels, like perfectly.
Yeah.
And I will completely, this is something I think people, this specific story, I think people will absolutely really enjoy. If there's somebody who likes art, who likes comics, they're going to like this. I really do believe that. So
I'll send you the last four pages of that story so you can read the whole thing, because it's only that book only has two pages in it on purpose of that story. But I'll go ahead and send you all six pages so you can read the whole thing. So because I'm kind of curious what your opinion is of the overall arc of that of those six pages. So that'll be fun.
Yeah.
Rick's amazing, and we got, you know, we specifically sought out people who primarily worked in non superhero books for the most part, just because there is a different aesthetic between superhero stories and horror stories. Now, an artist, that doesn't mean an artist can't draw both, right? But both have different strengths, as you'll see if you compare like a DC Marvel book to like a an EC Comics book or an old EC Comics horror book or any of the newer like Ben Templesmith, you know, Squitter books or any of the 30 Days of Night. There's a different aesthetic to horror.
We can even like take it, you know, one step here, you know, for people who aren't very knowledgeable. I can guarantee that most people who are newer to comic books have probably read a Walking Dead comic book. So compare a Walking Dead comic book to like one of the superhero comic books. They are vastly different. So that
exactly. Cause the pen, your panel layout is going to be different. The way the artist approaches how to do things is going to be different.
Yes.
You know, not everyone's going to be in some superhero heroic pose all the time. You know, it's going to be more realistic and more gritty. Yeah. You know,
I feel it's more personal. That's kind of how
I. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And dirty. They're so dirty. Okay, I love it. Yeah. But, you know, one of the things, I haven't mentioned it yet, but I have two big wins on this book for me personally as a creator. The first one is I realized at some point in the production last year that I needed help with this book. Like, I couldn't do this all on my own. You know, not only did I need help with the art, but the whole like production aspect of coordinating all this shit and keeping everything on track and making sure we got the book done. You know, that's a lot to do, as well as, you know, I mean, in the first book, there's a story that I drew. There's two stories that I wrote. There's a couple stories that I colored. There's a story that I lettered. You know, I did all this work on various stories. Plus story edited the whole book. You didn't get it in the sample book, but throughout the actual book, there is narrative pages in between each story of a narrator walking or talking you through what's happening, not like directly, but kind of, you know, indirectly telling a story between the stories. And that's, you know, I'm writing and drawing that. So I've got a lot of hats on in this book. So I realized I needed some help with this. So I was able to convince my friend Casey Allen, who is the guy who runs the Comic Jam. I convinced him to say, hey, come be a co-editor on this book with me and help me make sure that it gets to completion. He's like, absolutely, I would love to. So I brought on Casey mid last year. And since I brought Casey on, the volume of stuff we're able to push out and like get done has increased immensely. Cause I'm able to basically say, and he's more of a producer. Like if this was a TV show or a movie, he would be a producer, not an editor, because that's the job he's doing. It's like a producer. But he's able to like say, hey, Casey, we need to do these things this weekend. You know, can you handle this? You know, doing these things for me. He's like, yeah. So he goes and does this kind of stuff. He gets, you know, the contracts done for the artists and the creators. He makes sure that, you know, the stories get done on the checkboxes get done for them to get done. He also wrote a story in the first book, and he has a story in the second book, and he's written some stories because he's a very, very talented writer as well. And it was a big win for me to bring on someone that had the same passion for this book that I have. But wasn't a creator. You know, he was just a friend of mine that I've been talking with. And, you know, he was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he has jumped on and helped out so much. And another big win was that my co-host for Spoiler Country, Kenrick, he is, you know, he's my wife's uncle. He's one of my best friends. We do Spoiler Country together. We do Drinks and Comics on YouTube together. We talk every single day. We talk, you know, about comics, about life, about everything. And he's always, you know, he's a great creative writer. He's done stuff before, but he's never been published. He's never wrote a comic book before. And I told him, I was like, hey, why don't you write an Ainz comic or an Ainz story and see how it works. If it's good, we'll use it somewhere. If it's not good, you know, then it's not good. I'll be honest with you. So he wrote a quick three-page Christmas story that's in the sampler book about Krampus a character named Nancy Ainz.
I like that.
And he wrote that up. Yeah, that one came out really well. And he sent it back to me, and he was like, what do you think? He was very like, he thought I was going to hate it. And I was like, no, dude, this is good. This is a quality three-page story that doesn't really need a lot of intro, outro, introduction. It's just a snippet of what's happening. And it does enough explanation that it's not over-explained, but it's also not under-explained of what's going on. And he's like, okay, cool. Then we were lucky enough to get Scott Godlesky, who's the artist on Copperhead. He's the artist who does, he's done Superman, Batwoman, Green Lantern, a bunch of stuff for DC. We got him to come and draw to the art for those three pages, which was a huge win for us because we're both big fans of Copperhead. Like that's one of my favorite sci-fi books out there is Copperhead. If you haven't read it, by God, all means, pick it up. It's amazing. It's written by Jay Ferber, art by Scott Godlewski, colors by Ron Riley. It's fantastic. We got him to draw it, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to color this. I want to color Godlewski's art. So the colors you see in the book are by me over Scott Godlewski, written by Kendrick Regan, and that was kind of like a dream of ours for Kendrick and I to work together on a story with this artist that we both really respected and loved a lot for this work on Copperhead and other stuff he's done. And that was a big one for the book to be able to get that in there. And the fact that Scott was so jazzed about the story and so had so much fun doing it that it was a great experience all around for us.
Unfortunately, the sample copy isn't colored, so I can't see what your colors look like with it, but.
Oh, it's not colored. Nah. Oh shit. I'll send you a colored copy. I totally thought they're, you know what? If you re-clicked, when did you download the sample copy? Was it recently
just,
or when I first sent
just
it to
today.
You? Okay. Damn it. I forgot that I put the black and white samples in there. I'll send you a copy of the colors.
There's a couple in here that are colored, but there's a few that aren't colored also. That's all right.
Well, some of the coloring pages for the full book aren't done yet. We're still working on finishing everything. I mean, the book's like 90% done. We just have like some letters and some colors left to finish for the first book.
Yeah. When are you expecting, or when is the release date for this book?
Well, so the book is on Kickstarter from February 1st. Then for 30 days after that, then it'll close. Assuming we get funded at the end of this whole chaos campaign, because Kickstarters are, you know, stress.
Yeah.
I partnered up with Kraken Print to print the book. They're already on deck to print it as soon as we're done with the Kickstarter and have the money to pay for printing. So the turnaround time is really from them. Once I have all the files done, the book itself will be done probably about 2 weeks into the Kickstarter, right? So we're not done now and we're not going to be done with it by launch, but by the time it's on Kickstarter, which is February 1st, which will be, this will air after that, I'm pretty sure. So it's already online right now, I guess, because we're doing this in, God, I'm so bad at this, doing things early and forgetting about that. I'm sorry.
That's all right. No, so yeah, so. We're here. I mean, let's take away the illusion,
the veil.
It is January 13th right now, so that's when we're prepared for the Kickstarter, which starts on February 1st. So, you'll be able to the link will be in the description. You can click the link to get to the Kickstarter, obviously. But you're saying, by the end of February, when Kickstarter is over, as long as you get the funds that you need, it's pretty good. It's pretty much going to be quick. You're just going to push it out, or are you going to hold off?
Yeah, I'm going to push it out.
Okay. I didn't know if you're going to hold off and like have a big release date or anything like that. You're just going to push it out.
Not for Kickstarter. So the Kickstarter backers will get their books immediately. So when I was talking with the guy, Jacob from Kraken Print, who's a super nice guy. If you're printing your indie books, talk with Kraken Print. So, I mean, My friend Kevin Joseph, who does a book called Tart, which if you haven't read Tart, it's an amazing book about a demon hunter. I love it. He recommended Kraken Print to me. He says they're amazing to work with. They're super nice. And I messaged him. I've been talking with Jacob for over a month now about this campaign. And so we partnered with them to do all of our printing. And we're doing it all. It's all U.S.-based printing. So all the printing is not being shipped overseas. It's all done here in the United States. And he said there's about, for the quantity of books and the quality of books that we want, it's a 3 to 4 week turnaround time from him getting the files to me getting the books to ship out. So Kickstarter backers should receive their books in April or June sometimes. I should have them in March. I should have them like in middle of March and be able to like start, you know, signing the ones that need to be signed, doing sketches, the ones that need to be sketched for all the rewards people have, packaging them up and shipping them out. So people should have it in their hand by April. And then after that, once all the Kickstarter people have it and all the Kickstarter people have been shipped out, because they deserve to have the book first, right? They're the reason why the book is getting published.
Absolutely.
I will do a launch at a local comic book store here. And I haven't quite figured out what date that is. I'm kind of holding off selecting that date until after I know for a fact when I'll have the books to all the Kickstarter backers so I can kind of time it better. But that being said, there is a chance I may break my own rule there that I just stated, because Crypticon Seattle is happening this year. And what better place to premiere a horror book than at a horror convention in Seattle?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I may be at CryptoCon this year, premiering the book if I have it back in time from the printers, regardless of whether or not it's out to the backers, because that's an opportunity I can't quite miss, because at times, looking at the timeline, it's going to be like right after I get the book. So I'll get the books, assuming everything gets funded, and then I can go to CryptoCon and, you know, expand the horizons of this book going out everywhere.
So,
but, you know, besides that, it'll be going to backers first, and then I'll be doing a release at a couple local comic stores, and then at this store called Retro Emporium in Kent, Washington. I'll be doing a signing release party there as well.
So the Kickstarter, and please forgive me here, because I, honest to God, I know what Kickstarter is. I've seen people do Kickstarter. I've never been involved with a Kickstarter. I've never, you know, jumped in on board, you know, helping anybody out with a Kickstarter. I've never even, you know, thought about starting one myself. So what exactly, for the listeners, because I'm sure there's some people that here that have never done, or like me, who've never jumped on board with it. What does it entail? Like, what do they have to do? Do they go on? Is there certain tiers? Like, you know, like with Patreon, there's tiers and stuff like that. Is it anything like that?
Kind of is. Yeah, it kind of is. So basically what Kickstarter is it's a way to crowdsource or crowdfund a project, in this case, a comic book. So what you can do is there's obviously tiers. Like, if you just want to go donate money saying, yes, I want to help it, but help you out, make this book, but I don't really care to get a copy of the book, you know, that's an option always. I don't recommend that option, because I'd rather you get a book out of this. But there's different tiers. You can buy just a digital copy of the book. You can buy a physical copy of the book that we can, you know, sign and have sent to you. You can buy the book plus, you know, prints. You can buy a sketch cover of the book, basically meaning that there's special versions of the book that are blank cover with just a logo on the front that I will then draw in watercolor paint something on the front of it for you, which will be like, it'll most likely be a monster from somewhere in the book. There are other rewards up higher, like you could buy the LCS book, the LCS version, where you can buy, you know, 10 copies to put in the comic book store if you want to, or 10 copies to give to all your friends at a discounted rate. There's also rewards, like, let's say you want to own some original art from the book. And, you know, you will have rewards to buy certain pages out of that we're going to put up for sale through the Kickstarter. That the funds that you buy from that page will then help, you know, to the printing of the book. Obviously, every reward you will get a copy of the book in some way, right, digital or physical. But, you know, basically you pick the level you're comfortable spending, whether it's $10, whether it's $300 or whatever, and you get rewards based upon, you know, how much you give. Now, there's also ways you can, like, let's say you want to spend $100, but you only want the $40 reward. You could pick the $40 reward and then just pay more. People do that sometimes too. But really, it's about what can you afford if you want to help this book get to completion, and what rewards you get for that level of money you're quote unquote donating or contributing to this fund. Because ultimately, it comes down to, Kickstarter books don't happen without the fans, without the readers. Like, this is just basically creators saying, look, I'm making this thing. Do you want this thing? Tell me you want this thing by giving me money that you would pay at a store. But instead of it going through a distributor and then getting marked up and then going to a store and getting marked up and then having to be marked up more because of salaries with that, you're giving it all to the creator, and the creator is then taking care of the publishing costs. And, you know, more money goes back into the hands of creators to make more, to create more things. So that's why I like it, because it's basically a way to directly support a creator to make more books if you like what they do.
I agree. I love the idea of Kickstarter. I've always loved the idea of it. Like I said, I've never gotten involved with it because honestly, there's just never been anything that I've been really excited about. This though, I am absolutely excited about it. I love the paranormal. I love the supernatural kind of stuff when it comes to the real world and as well as fiction. So this here, I'm definitely looking forward to. I will definitely be helping out with it. So don't worry about that. So issue one, or is it issue one? Is that what you're calling it? Issue one or
book one. Okay. Because it's going to be a square bound book. So we're not doing it. It's not going to be a saddle stapled comic. It's going to be a square bound graphic novel that comes out.
Gotcha. So book one. Obviously there's plans for additional books. I think you did mention.
We have four books planned.
Okay. Yeah. You did mention four books.
We have four books planned right now. Book two is actually halfway done already. Book three is about 20% done. And then book four is 0% done. But book two, we're already working on book two in the background, because when I get bored and there's something I get to a point in the night where there's nothing more I can do on book one, I'll flip to book two and start working on book two.
How long do you think it's going to be for everything to be rolled out If you want, you don't need, you don't need to say anything if you don't want to. But
no, it's fine. I don't mind. Our goal is to release books 1, 2, 3, and 4 every 3 months for a year. So it'll take us, you know, 1 year to release all 4 books.
Very ambitious. I think every time I talk to you about just your life in general, it's ambitious.
I've heard that quite a lot.
I don't understand how you have time, when you have time. You have 5 kids, a wife, what, a podcast, a YouTube show, this plus other things that I probably can't remember.
A full-time job. I mean, I have a full-time job that I've worked for 9 years in Seattle for a software company. So I do that. No, I mean, one, I don't sleep a lot. I mean, I sleep, but I get up early. I go to bed late. I've always been very driven and I'm very goal oriented. And, you know, Kurt Sasso from TGT Media, when I was talking with him yesterday, said it the best. He calls me Jay because he's known me for a long time. He goes, Jay, the thing I've always noticed about you that I love about you is, whenever you do anything, you go big. You don't go little. You just go as big as freaking possible. Whether you fail or not, you still go big. And I'm like, yeah, I kind of. So for me, it's like I get into something and I just want to make it the best I can. And the best I can make it means I'm going to have to put a lot of work into it. And I'm okay. If I love what I'm doing, I'm okay with putting in, you know, hours and hours and hours and hours to get something done, as long as it meets the goal of what I'm wanting to do at the end. So, you know, Casey and I are planning to do one book every 3 months for this. We're also very aware of the fact that we may not hit that. We may end up doing one book every 4 months or one book every 5 months, and that's fine. I'm okay with that, but we're just going to plan for every 3 months and try and make that work. And if we have to push a date, then we have to push a date. But I'd rather have a goal in mind and an idea in mind and work towards that and then have to push it rather than be ambiguous. Like, oh, well, it's going to come out sometime in the future. We don't know when. And kind of like, because when you have dates, that makes you work harder to hit those dates, you know, especially for me. Because we've talked about pushing, Ions last, you know, in December 2018. Maybe we should do it in March, not February. And I was like, no, we said February 1st. We're sticking to February 1st. We're going to hit that February 1st, you know, goal date of starting it. And we're not going to, you know, even if we have to, you know, make things, you know, push ourselves harder. And I have to stay up, you know, 24 hours to work on shit. I will, you know, we got to push ourselves. I got to push myself to make that. You know, we're doing the same thing with the rest of them, but, you know, that we're not quite that hard until we get closer to it. But, you know, if I have to push book two out to be 4 months after book one, that's fine. As long as we go into it knowing we're pushing it out, we're going to make this. All 4 books will come out, you know, for this, because we have enough stories worked on and written to fill up 4 books. So, you know, that's it.
So if it goes how I envision it going, because what I've seen already is fantastic. and let's just say it just takes off and, you know, you're exceeding what your expectations were. I mean, is this something that you'll continue? Obviously, I don't know the overall story. I don't know, not the overall story, but I don't know if you have an ending in mind that happens in book 4 that kind of closes everything up. But is it something that you would ever consider, you know, going on further with?
So without telling the ending to book 4, yes, we already have plans for spinoff books in the Ions world. We actually are already working on a 48-page standalone graphic novel written by myself and Casey and drawn by Rick Bugby, the guy who drew Camelot's Gift in the first book, telling a story, a full 48-page story with some of the characters from books 1, 2, 3, and 4. And so there are definitely aspects of continuation we want to do that we're looking forward to doing if this still goes well, but that book with Rick won't happen unless, you know, we do, you know, the first couple books do well, which I really hope they do. Book 4 will end the first arc of stories. Doesn't mean it's going to end everything, because one of the joys of doing a story like this is we really have unlimited amounts of stories we can tell in this world. Now we may have to, it may be with other characters or it may be with other aspects of the family, but we can tell stories forever in this world.
Excellent. Yeah. Dude, I'm looking forward to it. I really am. I'm not going to lie. Whenever you first told me about it, what was it? Probably, I don't know, weeks ago. I was a little like, huh, that sounds interesting. Not sure if it would be something for me, but after reading the samples, after hearing and talking to you here, well, you've done most of the talking, but listening to you here.
No, that's fine.
but listening to you here, I tell you what, like I'm amped. Like I'm legitimately amped for this book completely. Like it's top of my list right now for what I want to get this this year when it comes to comics.
That's what I like to hear right there. Yes.
So I'm just hoping that other people get excited about it. That's what I hope. I don't know.
I hope so too. I really hope so. For me personally, I hope so, not because I want my book to sell and make money, but because I want people to experience these stories. I feel like these stories are stories that people should experience if they like this kind of genre stuff. I really want people to experience these stories, not because I helped create them, but because the people involved put a lot of time and love and effort into these stories. And they, every time someone sent me a script or sent me artwork back, I was blown away. I was like, man, it always came back better than I expected. And I have pretty high standards when it comes to certain things. And it's just the quality people put in this is just, again, I'm excited to hear people's reaction when they pick up the book. And I'm sure there'll be people who hate it, because there always is, and that's fine. Not everything's for everybody. I'm more in tune to, I want to hear people who enjoyed it or people who have thoughts about it or questions about things. I'm looking forward to people reading the book and then asking questions about it.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll have many questions, but here's the great thing about a series like this. Like, you want to have questions. You want to, after a story, like, oh, what was that? Like, what did I just read? What did I just see? Only because it's going to make you want to see more, read more, you know, get the next book.
Right. And right.
That's, to me, that's what I'm looking forward to, is just seeing what kind of questions come up and what kind of journey this can take me on.
That's awesome. Because one of the things we're doing that Casey and I have been working on is we're actually tying the website into the books some ways. Because if you go to the website, not now, not here in January, and not quite in the first part of February, by mid-February, you'll be able to go to the website and you'll be able to learn about the stories that are in the first book, as well as the creators who are in the first book. But in those synopses and about the stories, you'll learn about the family members on the website. So you can read the book and get the stories, but you can also go to the website and get more backstory on those characters and how they're related to other stories. Because there are stories throughout time in these books, but there are stories you may read and not realize that you're reading the story of the story before its parents, right? Like, the next story is about that guy's parents, and there's little things in the stories that connect them. There's little things that weave between that connect everything to everything else. And like, if you pay attention to the art, you know, you'll see there might be a trinket in one story that shows up in another story 100 years later, or there might be characters mentioned that are involved in other things that help lead to where things go. And we're tying that all back into the website, where we're going to be putting a little bit of, you know, backstories about characters and kind of like putting seeds and hints to who's related, how people are related and how things get to where they're going, all through the book and the website and other stuff we're working on. Like, we're working on, not to say that I'm insane and can't say no to projects, but there's also going to be, there's a soundtrack for the book that's being worked on with various musicians and artists and stuff like that. So that's going to, the music's going to tie into the story. So it's going to be a cool experience. I can't tell you enough how excited I am for this. And just, you know, the experience and the overall aspect of everything involved in this book. If people consume just the book, they're going to get one story. But if you consume the book and the website and the soundtrack and the other stuff that's going around with it, you'll get more and more to the story if you want it there. But you don't have to. The story is going to be good enough to tell you a story without going that way. But you get more if you want to go into all that.
I'm just going to go back to that word, ambitious. Soundtrack.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Oh, man. Well, I was a musician for like 10 years. I recorded albums and toured with bands. So with that, I was like, and one of the authors of one of those writers is a very talented composer. And he, I sent you the audio ad for Ainz. He composed the music for that for Ainz itself. And it came out so great.
Well, I don't know how much more there is to be said for
this book. My voice is getting dry. Yeah.
So, thank you for joining me on the podcast here. And, I look forward to further endeavors with you with podcasting, because you're a joy to talk to. We've been talking a lot more over the past probably 4 months, 3 or 4 months, and getting to know you has been great. This book, I am absolutely excited and amped for. I cannot wait to get my hands on it. So I hope everybody agrees. All the information, the Kickstarter, the website, everything will be in the description below. Again, the website you may not be able to hit until the middle of February, but everything else will be below that you can get on and just support this man. Support what him, not just him, but what all these artists and writers are doing. It's just It's so cool. Like, I don't even know another way to say it. It's so cool to see this. And I'm excited. I can't say that enough. And yeah. So thanks for joining me here. And anything else? Anything no problem. You want to say specifically that you didn't say already?
If you want to go to the website, which is active now, is einesanthology.com, E-Y-N-E-S, anthology.com. There's some information there now. We're going to be slowly leaking new information throughout the course of the campaign. And again, in March, after it's over, we're going to be putting more. The website is going to be basically the source of truth for all things Ions. It's going to have previews of the books up there. It's going to have a bunch of stuff up there. So as throughout the month, you can check the website out, and it'll be getting updates with new samples, new stories being told, new backgrounds of creators, and that's going to be your source of truth. If you want to follow me on any socials, just look for Y2CL on anything. That's going to be me. It's me on Twitter. It's me on Instagram. And then, as we mentioned earlier, I do a podcast, and I'm going to plug it here. Sorry for not asking first. Spoiler Country with Kenrick. Check it out. We love it. We do a podcast with my wife called Haphazard Adventures. Check that one out too, because that's a lot of fun. And then that's all. I'm done.
I love Spoiler Country. It's one of my go-to episode, or not episodes, podcasts on a weekly basis. So check them out also on Spoiler Country. I know that there's a guy who was on Twitter the one time who was real excited because we alluded to the idea of us crossing over at some point, and some guy on Twitter got some guy on Twitter got all excited. He was like, "Oh, two podcasts I listened to converging in one. That's awesome." So I think for that guy, we got to do it. We got to do it for that guy.
We have to.
Yeah.
We have to do it.
Have to now. Yeah, exactly. But again, thank you for being here. Or not here. You're not here. You're actually on the other side of the country, but thanks for joining me.
They don't know that. I could be sitting next to you. They don't know that.
Damn it.
God, you ruined it.
But thanks for joining me. It was a blast learning about this book. Everybody.
Not a problem.
Definitely.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And definitely everybody. Get onto the website, support everybody that's doing this, please. I want to see it all. I want to see all four books plus more come out, because that's how excited I am for it. So thank you again for being here, and thanks everybody for listening, and we will talk to you later.